Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest is Jason Brubaker. He's the author of Filmmaking Stuff, How to Make, Market, and Sell Your Movie Without the Middleman. Jason is a Hollywood-based independent motion picture producer and an expert in video-on-demand distribution. His focus is on helping filmmakers make, market, and sell movies more easily by growing their fan base, building buzz, and creating community around their title. Carol, Jason has a lot to teach us about self-distribution.
Yes, he surely does. And Jason, thank you so much for joining us and for your donation to the Roy Dean Film Grant. It's very kind of you. So let's start with marketing concept, because I know that you say that when someone wants to make a film, they should ask themselves, is it saleable? So tell us how you suggest people find the answer.
Well, firstly, it almost makes it sound like I'm taking away the art and I'm always focused so much on business, and business sounds boring to a lot of filmmakers, but I think it's a great question to ask in terms of, hey, I have this idea for a movie. It's a great idea. It's the greatest idea ever. Nobody's ever made a movie like mine before. It's gonna revolutionize the way movies are made, seen, and sold. I get a lot of emails just like that where people are describing these outlandish concepts that have never been proven. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't be original in their ideas, but they should take a somewhat pragmatic approach. If you're creating a movie, for example, about pine cones, it could be that your audience is limited to the 30 or so people that are searching for pine cones per month on the internet. And you have to determine at that point whether or not that's a topic that you want to explore. On the same token, I'm not saying it can't be done. It is possible with this example to create for you, an animated story about animated pine cones that, I don't know, save the forest, for example. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But the first thing that you should ask yourself is, has any movie like this ever been made before? And if so, how did they market it? Was it popular? Were they able to recoup their investment and actually gain popularity with the title? And I think that's a question that a lot of filmmakers don't ask themselves before they go into production.
Well, I totally agree with you. Is it saleable? Is the key issue, because just because you think it is, you may have a 3 to 5 year project on your hands. And the next question I've asked them to ask themselves is, can I stay attached to this for 5 years? Can I get up every day and work on this film? And if so, what's driving me? So not only will it be, is it going to be a fun ride? Am I going to enjoy it? And is there a market for it? You're absolutely right.
I agree with you. That first part about the fun thing, it has to absolutely be fun. If it's not fun, it's not worth doing. The sellable question kind of ties into what you were just saying about the five-year mission to make the movie. There has to be an end goal. I don't think anybody wants to create a movie just so it collects dust in your closet.
Or never gets finished. Absolutely right. But I've seen filmmakers, Jason, who will take a camera, go shoot some interviews, put them together, and then have some screenings to get feedback. And one woman had a great idea for a film, she thought, but after showing it to around, she realized it didn't have the market and it didn't have legs, so she shelved it and went to another idea.
Well, I think this is one of the reasons why, and I know in your book you talk a little bit about, well, actually you talk a lot about crowdfunding from the raising money aspect, but I think crowdfunding also offers filmmakers a great platform to test the concept and test the legs of, you know, their marketing to see whether or not anybody's even interested in the content before you move forward with the full production and dive in both feet first.
You know, I never thought about that, but you're right. It is a great platform. It doesn't cost you that much. It's just time, and you could save yourself a lot of time if it didn't have the market you thought it did. But let's say that you want to find out what your market really is. How do you do that?
Well, I would first start, and there are still some bookstores and newsstands left. The first approach I would say is if I was making a movie about, let me think of something that people might be interested in, skateboarding, for example. If I was making a movie about skateboarding, I would first want to find out whether or not the market existed for skateboarding. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to go into a bookstore and just look at the magazine rack. Are there skateboarding magazines? I'm familiar with this topic, so I know that there are. The next step is I would go out and contact the advertising departments of those magazines to find out exactly what the demographics are of the people that I'm trying to approach. They'll usually have age, gender, some of them even get very granular, income and primary, you know, hotspots in terms of where these people live. But if you're trying to focus on a more obscure subject, and one of the examples I know, Carol, that you and I have talked about in a separate conversation would be like maybe a Hispanic sushi chef, right?
Hard to say, but it's really important. Yes, go for it.
please interrupt me if there's other questions. Gosh, I can talk a lot on these things, and I don't want to just, I want to make sure that everybody listening gets some good content. I would go then, if it's a more obscure, well, for both of these, I would go both in the physical realm looking for traditional print publications like magazines and newsletters that cater to these target markets, and then I would go online and I would do web searches. So in the example of Hispanic sushi chef, you know, just for that alone, a Google search reveals that there's been some folks in the news that have been playing off of that, somebody in Chicago, somebody in New York, two sushi chefs that are Spanish. But that doesn't necessarily mean there's a market for it. It just means that somebody's kind of cracked the ice on the concept in the real world. Finding a market for it, one would say, hey, Spanish sushi or Spanish sushi chef or Hispanic sushi chef, they have to exist out there. Well, there's an easy way to find it. I go out to Google keyword traffic Google Keyword Traffic Analyzer External. I think that's what it's called. It's offered under AdWords, and I know I'm getting a little nerdy, so I can repeat all this stuff later. But Google has a tool where you can actually type in these search phrases, and it's free, and they'll tell you exactly how many people are looking for that per month, that exact term. So in the case of, you know, the Hispanic sushi chef, I type that in, and absolutely nobody's looking for that on Google. I typed in a couple different keyword combinations, and I found that 12 people are looking for Spanish sushi, and 46 people are looking for sushi in Spanish. But outside of that, then the keywords begin to fall apart, and it may reveal that there's not a market specific to Hispanic sushi, so I may have to go a little bit broader and go for the sushi market and find out if there was a way that I could angle, you know, a marketing campaign around just sushi in general with the hook that, hey, this is, you know, a Hispanic sushi chef, which is not a Japanese sushi chef.
Right on. How smart of you. Thank you very much. Filmmakers will really appreciate that information. That's what it's all about. Okay, so I actually have I am physically sponsoring a man making a film about this, so he will love that. But it can be used, same concept. For example, if someone was doing a film about a person who was into world peace, then you would come up with words that were similar to, you'd be looking for organizations that would support world peace, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'd get a spreadsheet, and there's probably some more automated nerdy ways to do this. I always like to throw around the word nerdy. I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. I just think anytime I get on the computer, I can spend hours doing this kind of stuff because I find it interesting, and most filmmakers think I'm crazy for it. But with that said, I get a spreadsheet, and I would come up with a list of the top 50 publications, both online and offline, that are catering to my target demographic. And I would later use that as the origin of a database when I go out and do a broader marketing campaign and I want to build buzz, because I want to make friends with these people, the people that run both the online and offline publications, and see later on down the road if there's any ways that we can cross-promote.
Cross-promote your film or their film with that information.
Correct. If somebody's already done a good job of sourcing an audience, let's say they have a blog that caters, in the arena of world peace, as you just described, if they have a blog that's very focused on that, and by researching their blog, and you find out that they would be a great fit, their readers might be very interested in your movie, then it's time to reach out to the owner of that blog and say, hey, I'm creating this movie. I'd like to send you a screener when we're done, and just start to involve them in the process very early on.
Right.
So that, they might be able to help you spread word of mouth, especially if they have 600-plus readers per day on their blog.
Exactly. This is what Indiegogo has done for us. It has opened our eyes on the fact that filmmakers should take on a hold of the concept, do it with others, because before now, filmmakers would shoot, go in the dark room, edit, come out and say, hey, look what I've done. And everybody would say, oh, that's nice. But now, today, your money is in your marketplace, don't you think, Jason?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm seeing a lot of shift taking place. I had mentioned that crowdfunding is a great way to test your marketing concept before you dive in. The other reason that crowdfunding is essential is because if you're successful, it allows you to pre-sell your movie even before you hit the marketplace. So where most times what we would do as filmmakers is we would create our product, which is our movie, and we cross our fingers that we'd get the dream distribution deal and live happily ever after. What was never said in the press is the vast majority of movies died in quiet obscurity. Usually the master or somebody would have a roll of film back when we shot film, and I know you know this very well. And these days now they have a whole bunch of DVDs and a hard drive that just collect dust. And nobody wants that. So this offers us an opportunity. Like you said, the money's in the marketplace. Now you can tap the marketplace even before you create the product. And
right. That's
very powerful.
Yeah. I completely agree with you, Jason. And I really love how you and both Carol are saying that it's really about the community, coming together with the community of those who are also working with the same topics, whether it's finding people with blogs. You can find them on Facebook. You can find them in many places where you can collaborate together on those same topics. I love that concept. And community is everything. I also want to ask you, what do you do to get names of potential customers for your film?
Well, the first thing that all filmmakers should do once they have, and I think all filmmakers should have two websites, one for their production company, and then a second website or an individual website for each movie that they produce. And in the context of that movie that they produce, as soon as they have a concept for their movie and they're going to move forward with it, they should have some sort of website set up Initially, that website might be very closely in tune with their crowdfunding campaign if they choose to go that route, and or during their promotional stage where they're trying to build some buzz about their movie, their website should be set up in such a way as to attract people that are looking for, you know, their type of content, and then get the visitors on the website into something. I usually utilize a mailing list, and the way that I get names is I have an opt-in form on my website, and we can go into more detail about that later, but I'll usually ask for a name and an email address of all of my visitors.
But that's really important. But let me just add, particularly important is the zip code. Because if, let's say that they get 5,000 people in Southern California, they could then run the zip codes and find out where they could take that film, rent a theater, and start doing their own marketing and distribution and four-wall the theater and show everybody that there is a market for their film. They know where their peeps are. Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it all really depends on your audience. I found with some of the stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
Most people forget the zip code, but that's the key thing to me.
Well, I think it's a great metric as long as people are willing to give that. Sometimes I find on these opt-in forms that if I put more, you know, the more information I ask for, the less my conversion rate is. So sometimes it might be good to get them into your list and then later ask them what their zip code is once they're in.
Have you had good luck with that?
Have I personally had luck with it?
Yeah.
No. The reason for that is I have not focused on physical theatrical screenings. Most of what I focus on is online with some of the outlets that we'll talk about later.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Peter Broderick says that that you don't make money on screenings in theaters, that it's a lot of work and very little return on investment. Do you agree?
Well, I haven't focused on theaters for that reason. Our first feature, we did four-wall it, and we did it more as a way to build buzz and get some – we had a screening in Hollywood, and our whole goal was just to get some Hollywood power players in there. So that they could treat us and we could let them know that we were, in fact, feature filmmakers. And that paid dividends, not financially, or at least not directly financially, but it paid dividends in terms of building buzz, as well as, you know, the writer of our first feature got a great agent out of that whole thing. And the ripple effect of that, you know, was valuable over time. In terms of making money four-walling, I'm not necessarily the guy to ask about that because it's just not something I focus on. And it's not that I've tested it fully. I'm not opposed to it. It's just in my experience, I would utilize film festivals before I would utilize, you know, a four-walling approach. And the reason being is the venue's already set up and the audience is sourced. But different than a lot of folks, my film festival strategy may include some of the rural film festivals that most people haven't heard of, because I'd like to get away from festivals, you know, that are populated primarily by filmmakers and actually get into festivals that are populated by people so that I could then get them on my mailing list and later on down the road sell them a video on demand download and or a DVD and other merchandise. So the approach is a little bit different.
Okay. Well, Claire, have you got a question?
Yes. Now, I know that we touched a little bit on this, but there's still a little more that we need to cover, and that is about how important your Facebook page is and some of the things you can do with that.
Yeah, your Facebook is a great place to build community, and what's really interesting about it is building your Facebook fans, there's two ways to go about it. You either spend a lot of time and sweat equity to build that community within Facebook, or you pay some money to create some targeted advertising to get people to like your page. But once you have people to like your page, then your next goal, in my opinion, is to get those people off of your Facebook page and get them onto a mailing list that you can control. And this is based partially on experience. Maybe 5 years ago, I had about 10,000 friends on MySpace, And it felt like almost overnight those people became non-responsive to me. The site fell out of vogue. And I'm not saying that would happen in film or over at Facebook, but what I am saying is it's just far better to get folks into a list that you can control, because that list, you know, especially the way paradigms are shifting, you know, we no longer have physical retail distribution the way we used to. So what we depend upon is getting eyeballs to go wherever our movie's showing online, whether that be Amazon, you know, to buy the DVD, or iTunes to you know, rent it for, you know, a stream or a very short time. So going back to the Facebook page should be complementary to your movie. The branding should be consistent with your movie artwork. But your goal on Facebook is to get people there and then get them to take action to get them off of Facebook. So one of the things that I would include in Facebook is a link and or a way to get them to opt into your mailing list, and I'd offer an incentive for folks to do that, whether it's a download to maybe the soundtrack of your movie or maybe a download to your movie poster.
Brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that you're talking about this, go back to the website. What do we need to do to create an engaging website for a film?
In the initial stages of your website development, it should be a very basic website consisting of a trailer, if you have it, some minor information about the movie, but more than just having all the behind-the-scenes photos and crazy anecdotes about the actors and the director and I'm so important and I'm awesome. I mean, that stuff's vitally important, but I think that stuff should be presented in a narrative, maybe in the context of a blog. So all movie websites should be simple. They should have a trailer, and in the initial stages, they should have a blog. And that blog should consist of videos. It should consist of stories, but not just any stories, and not just stories related to production. If we're doing something on, like we mentioned earlier, World Peace or Sushi Chefs, then those articles may be, you know, those articles should be geared towards people that are looking for that type of information.
We lost you for a minute there, Jason. Are you with us?
You know,
I did. A very good time.
Oh, okay. Actually, I did hear what he had to say. It might have dropped out on your line, but yes, please go ahead and quickly recap what you just said so that Carol can catch up with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was mentioning that filmmakers should create a blog component for their website. They should update that blog frequently, at least 2 to 3 times a week. It doesn't just have to be the director or the producers updating that. They may have people on their team that are good writers that may just want to go out and write an article related to the topic. And then through those articles, they get picked up by search engines, and they can generate traffic back to the website, at which point you want to get them into your mailing list and let them know that the movie exists.
Right. Okay. And then, of course, you also talked about videos.
Yeah, every time that you create a video online, I prefer YouTube as a place for at least the must-have with videos. You can expand other platforms later, but YouTube's my first stop, primarily because they pay for all of the streaming.
Okay.
It's owned by YouTube, which makes it the second largest search engine on Earth. And there's a social media component built into it where you can see what people have to say about your movie, whether or not they like it, and what their comments are.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, I know you also talked about the email, you know, gathering emails and so forth. That would be your opt-in box when they go to your website. And as far as what you would ask for in your opt-in box, that would be the name and email address of the person that is opting in?
Yeah, I hit on that a little bit earlier, whether or not we should include zip codes or somebody's address. I have found, and again, this differs with every filmmaker, it differs with every project, but in my own marketing world, I found that if I ask for more than a name and an email address, my opt-ins begin to drop off dramatically. Some folks have a really good time just asking, and they have a really high conversion rate just asking for the email address. People seem to be very responsive to that. So you're not even asking for a name, you just want the email address. In my own world with filmmaking stuff, I found that I have higher conversions when I ask for both the name and the email address versus just the email address.
Right.
And there could be a whole bunch of reasons for that. I'm not sure why, but I just know through testing that I get more opt-ins when I ask for both the name and the email address. So everybody, you know, marketing, this is the artistic part of it. The science is testing. The art is trying different things to see whether or not it works better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. And then, of course, having a good system for collecting all of that in one place, that easy access, and that you can continually update as those email addresses and names come in, correct?
Yeah, one of the things that I utilize is I utilize a third-party email service, and all filmmakers should. And the reason for that is, first, you want to abide by spam laws. You never want to send emails directly from your own server, especially once you get a couple thousand people on your list. The reason for that is you may come across, you know, as a spammer if you don't do things the right way, and then next thing you know, every email you send goes in somebody's spam folder. So I use a third-party email marketing service called AWeber, and my affiliate link, I've partnered with them to where they pay me a small commission for promoting. That's full disclosure. But you can find out more about it if you go to audiencelist.com, and that's audiencelist.com. What you do is you pay a minimal fee per month, but now you have a third-party email service managing all your emails and helping you abide by spam laws. Within that service, there's something called a sequential email autoresponder, which means you may want to come up with, you know, I'll use one of our earlier examples. You might have five emails that you create, which would be the top five ways we can have world peace if we were using, you know, making a movie about world peace. And you might send out one of, you might have it set up so one of those emails gets sent out every week on a Monday between 3 in the afternoon and 5 in the afternoon. You can get that specific with it. So now if somebody signs up this week, they get email number one, and next week they're on email number two while somebody else signs up and they're still on email number one. This is great okay. because you begin to automate a part of your business so that you can focus on making your movie but still stay in contact with people. And it's not fully robotic. I mean, it might send out a robotic newsletter to folks, but if they have a question, you're going to receive that question right in your email inbox. And then you can respond to them because it is actually you responding to them. And this has been a great way for me personally in my own marketing to build community. And it continues, you know, to be one of the top things that I promote because, you know, anytime I give a talk, I always make people repeat after me. And they always repeat, you know, I'll just say it right now, but if you're listening to this, you know, this is something, maybe some of the most important advice right now with this ever-changing landscape. My audience is my business. I am responsible for sourcing my own audience, and without an audience, I have no business.
Right.
So to that, you know, email marketing is probably one of the top things that you need to focus on as a filmmaker.
Well, that's good to know. And then very quickly, we have about 1 minute left. Can you also talk about what filmmakers need to know about video on demand marketplaces as well? Like Amazon?
Yeah, video on demand marketplaces are getting into marketplaces. You no longer need a middleman. You no longer need to give away all of your rights to get into some of the marketplaces. Right now I'm working for a company called Distribber, which allows us to help filmmakers get movies into various marketplaces. The top three that I always go for would be Hulu, iTunes, and Amazon. And you can get in those marketplaces and retain all of your rights. The biggest thing that filmmakers have to know is there's this thing called encoding, and it's new for all filmmakers, but to get in these marketplaces, each platform requires a different submission guideline, and it's somewhat of a painful, long process that, you know, might require a whole other interview just to go over, but just know that there are companies out there that will help you that will not take all of your rights off the back end.
Great, and good to know. Thank you so much, Jason. We just have a few seconds left, and I want to let our listeners know that you can find Jason Brubaker and his book, Filmmaking Stuff, How to Make, Market, and Sell Your Movie Without the Middleman, through his website at filmmakingstuff.com. Carol and I want to thank you for listening and tuning in. Visit our website as well at FromTheHeartProductions.com.